on the platform. So I develop in Apex and Lightning components, working in one of our internal orgs called Gus. So building Salesforce for Salesforce.
That is Jonathan Gillespie, a lead software engineer here at Salesforce. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here in the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we bring back Jonathan, actually, to the mic to talk about a follow-up to his Nebula Logger project, the Nebula Cache Manager. We're going to talk about how cache works, how it works with Apex, and how it can make your life better. But first, we're going to ask Jonathan what his earliest memory with a computer was.
Earliest would probably have to be, I think, years before we got one, a computer at my house, visiting, I want to say probably my cousin in Virginia. His parents had, I think it was an old Apple of some sort, but it was in color. And it had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing that you could color in with paint and color it in however you want to digitally. Really cool stuff.
Love it. Love it. It's advanced. And was computing something that you always wanted to get into?
As long as I can remember, I mean, like since at least middle school or so, I think I was always interested in tinkering with the technology.
Gotcha. Now, this Apex Cache project we're going to talk about comes in part with your previous experience from your previous episode, Nebula Logger. Just a level set for everybody, what exactly is Nebula Logger?
Yeah, so Nebula Logger is, as far as I'm aware, it is now the most popular logging tool for Salesforce available. It's a project that I've been working on since 2016, give or take. So I don't know where the time goes, but about 6 or 7 years now. A lot of help from a friend and colleague, James Simone, along the way. And it's just something I've been kind of going at. I talked about in the last podcast about, you know, just kind of the history about it and all that. But it's just a project that I've been pretty heavily working on over the last 2 or 3 years in particular is when it's really gotten popular. I mean, it's just intended to be something that works in pretty much any Salesforce org, gives you the ability to log extra data for Apex, Flow, as well as Lightning components.
Nice. Now, in the accompanying blog post on the joys of Apex that you're talking about this new project, you identify three specific limits which led you to start thinking about better cache strategies. Can you walk me through those limits?
Sure. Yeah, if I can remember the three. I believe the three, if I'm remembering right, are around some query limits. Just because anytime you try and access the database in Salesforce or Apex, various limits that come into play, one of which is SQL query limits. So depending on the type of transaction that you're running in, if it's async or synchronous, the query limit can vary a little bit, but you basically have around 100 or so queries that you can use. I mean, in some really complex orgs, those queries can go pretty fast, especially if you're using managed packages have their own limits, but other packages that you may have installed in your org could count towards the same limit, depending on how those packages have been designed. So query limits are a big one that can go through pretty quickly on top of just queries are kind of slow anyway. I believe one of the other limits was CPU time. Some data doesn't necessarily live in the database. It's generated through code kind of on the fly. And that work takes time as far as CPU time goes for transactional limits. So anything you can do to reduce how much code has to execute or can help speed things up. And then I think the third one that I mentioned in the article and something that I come across a lot with integrations is callout limits. There's just like query limits, there's a limit on the number of callouts you can make per transaction. There's also an additional amount of complexity of you can't do, I always get this backwards, you can't do DML before callout, I believe.
I believe that's correct.
Good.
So because it makes sense, right? You want to make sure the data you're about to impact hasn't already impacted before you did the call out.
Yeah.
Am I walking through that correctly? Yeah. Okay.
It sounded good. Yeah.
And these are limits that you've just sort of generally run into because, like, does Nebula Logger have any particular call out limits that it runs into? Or is this just sort of, these are limits on Apex that you run
those
into?
Those three are just more broadly speaking, ones that I've run into a lot over the years. Not necessarily something specific to Nebula Logger. But some of these did come about because of running into it. Like in particular, I don't typically run into callout limits with Nebula Logger. It makes a single callout at most per transaction, I believe. So that one's not going to do much harm. But just the general performance of Nebula Logger, I like to think that the code base is, you know, pretty well optimized and clean overall. Mm-hmm. But it's grown a lot. There's a lot of features and things happening that have been added over the last year or two. And in some orgs, there are some orgs using Nebula Logger that are trying to log data in an org that has millions of rows of records, some in multiple objects each have millions of rows of data. So just trying to do things like queries, every query becomes that much more precious and can have a negative impact if you're running too many queries at all. And CPU time also can be, if you do a lot of logging data at once, again, I try and keep the code optimized overall, I think, but stuff happens. And in large data volume, CPU time can also be a concern.
I mean, I guess that makes sense because Nebula Logger is trying to help monitor throughout your whole org. So the larger, the more complicated, and especially if you start getting to large data volumes, then what's the most obvious impact that people would see? Is it just slower, or is it every now and then just kind of like a wrench gets thrown at it because it just went over a SQL query limit?
So I don't actually hear many people reporting about it going over the query limit. I think most of the architecture of Nebula Logger, a lot of it runs asynchronously. So as far as risk of running over the query limits and the number of queries it does throughout the code base, not a major concern, but there was one very large org using it. And because of some of the queries that it runs, and I guess just for context, some of the queries it does is if you log, say, any kind of S object record, it'll query for additional information about that record. It also logs information about the current user, the current organization that the code is running in. The Apex class is deployed to your org, the flow is deployed to your org, things like that, just metadata or meta-metadata. And some of those queries are great as far as having extra context when looking at logging information, but they come at the expense of all these extra queries that run. So even though they're running asynchronously, I thought originally that was, you know, a good enough solution because they were running async, so they didn't block the original user's transaction or slow things down. But what turned out to happen in some of these large orgs, this one in particular, this customer was logging, I want to say 2 or 3 million rows of logging data per day. Wow. pretty nuts. And so that's, you know, millions of records being generated. Each one then is running multiple queries. So they were actually getting throttled at the database level on their Salesforce instance. So it had not something that I think typically happens, but for this org in particular, it really had some... It's a big impact to their org overall, slowed down essentially lots of their org because they had integrated logging everywhere.
Gotcha. Now, you kind of bring up static variables as sort of, let's walk a little bit how, because we have kind of this, you know, very unique cloud-centric multi-tenant architecture and all of that kind of stuff. When we say a static variable in Apex, what are we actually seeing and what's the scope of that?
Yeah, so in Apex, any static variable you have is going to basically last for the duration of a transaction. And that's transaction is defined by Salesforce and the platform overall. If you're a Salesforce admin or a Salesforce developer and you've ever tried to learn about the order of execution, that is your Salesforce transaction. So, you know, user clicks save, that fires triggers, that fires flows, that fires any other automations you've got, and then you're done. That is basically the duration that a single or any static variable will live. I think that's a little bit different from a lot of other platforms or languages. It's been years since I've done a lot of C# or Java, but I think, you know, in those languages, once your app starts up and the static variables are initialized, they stay populated or in memory for the duration of your app.
Right.
Versus Salesforce, it's much smaller focus and it's just a single transaction.
Right. And that transaction would often have a query associated with it, right? Like it's a static variable that's trying to create an S object or a series of S objects based on some kind of SQL filter. Now I've got the tongue-tied. Some kind of SQL filter.
Right, exactly. Yep. So every transaction has this upfront overhead of it has to run these queries in order to populate any static variables, or if it's doing callouts or CPU usage to generate data, whatever the case may be, every transaction has this overhead.
Yeah. Right. So every transaction has to redo its query. I can only access the value of that static variable during the transaction. How does platform cache help with that?
So platform cache is an extra layer that Salesforce has. It does have some included space for every org, I believe. Has some included, some larger orgs, you may have to purchase additional usage. But the idea behind it is it's a way to store data that doesn't need to live in, you know, a custom object or somewhere else in your Salesforce data model, but you want it to be, you know, it's not going to change frequently. So you want it to be reused when possible for some duration of time. Could be, you know, a few seconds, could be for the duration of a single day. But platform cache basically provides that extra layer of having a place to store data that spans multiple transactions.
And what's the difference between organizational and session platform caches?
organization is really designed for data that is not user specific and that anybody in the org should be able to access, even if it's indirectly via code. So the example I used in the article I wrote for Joys of Apex, I like using the example of queue data. Queues are Salesforce feature.
Got
that,
it.
That basically you can assign records to either a user or to a queue. And there's just no way to get information about your queues in your org without doing a query. So the queues are a great way or a great example of this. They have to be queried. For most orgs, queues don't change very frequently. There are some where you're constantly creating or changing your queue information, but most of the projects, at least, you know, anecdotally, ones that I've seen over the last several years, we might create a new queue, you know, once per every couple of sprints or as like part of our some new feature we're rolling out, but we're not sitting there constantly creating queues every day or anything. So they're a pretty good option of something to store in something like platform cache.
Got it. And then a session cache is user specific.
Correct. Yep. So the other side of it is session cache, which not only is it user specific, it also means that the user has to have an active session. So there are some nuances there, things like asynchronous jobs running. Those don't always have a user session in context. So that gets even trickier using a platform session cache.
Got it. So it kind of sounds like an organization cache is almost more like that application layer we're talking about. And then a session cache is ephemeral, but has the duration as long as I have an active session. Is that a good paraphrase?
Correct. Although the organization cache does automatically expire too. They both have automatic expirations. Oh, okay. Yeah.
What's the expiration on organization cache?
I believe organization cache can have a max of 24 hours, and session cache can have a max of either 8 hours or new session for the user, whichever comes first.
Got it. Okay. Now, what are some of the limitations of cache other than, so we talked about data size, and that's depending on your edition, right? Like if you've got a enterprise edition, you're not going to have the same as performance edition. So we've got size, we have duration. Any other limitations you can think of?
Definitely a couple of others. There's just some little things to be aware of. Things like if you are trying to store a null value, that's not supported. I think I kind of understand the intent behind it. There's no need for a caching system to have a null value, but it makes it more challenging from a code perspective because that means that you may have done the work, you may have made some call out to some other system, but that other system's response is a null value. And so now you don't have a direct way using platform cache to actually cache a null value. I ended up addressing that with a little goofy workaround. I have a substitute value for if there's a null value of any sort that comes across, I just use this ridiculous looking string value as a substitute. So it works. And it's a way to basically still have platform cache serve as a place to know whether or not you've already tried to do the caching, even though null values aren't quite supported.
Yeah.
There's also just some other kind of goofiness around. There's some limitations around the keys that you can use. So the idea is every time you want to populate something into platform cache, you provide a string key to identify that. Those keys have to be alphanumeric. You can't have any kind of underscores or delimiters or special characters or anything like that.
Okay.
Not a major deal in my opinion, but just something to be aware of when working with it.
And I love little details like that on the platform because you just know it's like probably based on some other person's implementation that we just haven't figured out how to throw another shim in there to make it work exactly the way we want to, because as you said, it's not that big of a deal. But I love the null thing because I feel like it's one of those like philosophical programmatic questions, right? Like, do you need null if it doesn't exist? But as you're saying, you kind of do sort of thing. Like what is the value of null? And it's in knowing that the response was actually, empty kind of thing. So I love that.
Right.
When did you start looking at some of these things? Because this sounds like one of those organic developer issues, like where you were working with Demulogger, you're working with other stuff in Apex. When did you first start thinking, okay, the platform has these capabilities, but what I really want to do is build an abstract layer on top of this.
So, it definitely started organically. It started probably a year or two ago. A couple people on GitHub started asking, if I had considered using platform cache to help speed up things overall and to reduce some of these queries. It was something I'd been avoiding, honestly, for about the first year or two of releasing the unlocked package for Nebulogger, because I knew that not all orgs have platform cache. So I didn't want to become highly dependent on it as a feature, and I didn't want to put people into a spot where things wouldn't perform as well if they didn't have platform cache. So I really initially just spent a lot of, probably a couple months, trying to do every optimization I could, just getting the existing code to work efficiently when possible. But then especially once I heard from some internal Salesforce employees about this very large org doing a lot of millions of years of logging data, seemed like time to finally investigate things a little bit.
How are you currently handling that when you have an org that has no platform cache? Are you like detecting that and then giving it some kind of a stub, or what's your solution there?
A couple ways I handle it. So platform cache itself, just as far as what the platform provides, like you said, it's organization cache and session cache. In this project, Nebula Cache Manager, I've introduced a third type that I call the transaction cache. And that's basically a way of storing stuff for the duration of a single transaction using static variables. So it's kind of done. You can use it if you do have your own code that you want to, or own data that you want to cache for the duration of transaction. The cache manager does have a way for you to use that as well. So it's publicly available in the class. But internally, I basically use it to also supplement the platform cache. So I try and use the organization cache and session cache when possible. But a couple things can go wrong with that. Either the org has used up all of the allocated session, or it could be that they don't have any allocation, or they for whatever reason, deleted the session itself or the partition itself altogether. So there's a couple things like that can go wrong with trying to use it. So basically, internally, it's anytime you try and use the organization or session cache, internally, it's also falling back on using the transaction cache as a way to kind of supplement and overcome some of the limitations of platform cache.
Interesting. So some of this, it sounds like the developer doesn't really need to know, like you're kind of treating the situation where you've run out of session cache, or you simply never had session cache in the first place, and your code will fall back to transaction caching. Or if I'm working on an org that I know doesn't have cache, I can talk to the transaction manager and just talk to transaction cache directly and kind of avoid the problem altogether.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted it to be, because I'm building this as an open source project, I wanted it to be something that could be installed into any org.
Yeah.
And even if you don't have platform cache, you do at least get the benefits of the transaction level caching. So there's still some benefits to it, and it should work in any org.
Talk to me a little bit more about the other design considerations that you had. So this is a big one, is being able to kind of give people a proxy layer, even if they don't have cache, to kind of behave in this way. What were some other things that you wanted to kind of give back to a developer from like a utility point of view with this?
Some of the big things is just the out of the box platform cache functionality in Apex. It's all in the cache namespace. You can do a lot of really cool stuff. But there were a couple things that I didn't like when having to initially work with it, or that, you know, felt error prone. Things like there's not a strongly typed reference to a cache partition. So if you want to reference what cache partition you want to put data into, you have to use a hard-coded string somewhere. Somebody could mistype the hard-coded string, something could go wrong, or the name could change, and that means you'd have to redeploy the code. So with this, I ended up adding in a custom metadata object to basically let you configure not only the name of the session partition or the cache partitions, but you can also configure other things like how long is the cache valid for. You can disable it or enable it on the fly. You can clear it. You can do a couple of nice things all through just configuration by an admin or developer.
Nice. So instead of relying it in code, I mean, that's what custom metadata is for, right?
It's nice. It's one of my favorite things over the last couple of years in the platform. I don't remember how long ago they released it, but it's super handy having custom metadata types.
Nice. I will also say that every now and then when I'm looking at code from projects like yours, it's also just the way you build out your interface is a very good example of why and how to build out an interface in Apex. It was almost like one of those aha moments when I first started doing, like, you know, data classes within Apex, just to create a structure kind of thing. And to kind of walk down that a little bit, what you've, with that interface, you've kind of given people a one point in the code where they can just sort of go to and catch up to the work that you've been doing to abstract this layer. Does that sound right?
It does. And that was another thing that wasn't something I initially set out to do. But as this evolved, when I was originally doing it for Nebula Logger, over the course of a couple months doing the initial implementation of platform cache and then converting that into kind of a standalone project, initially it started as three separate interclasses, one for transaction cache, one for session cache, and a third for organization cache. organization and Session Cache got combined pretty quickly because they're both ultimately just doing platform cache stuff. But then, you know, kept on working on it. And I still had some inconsistencies between the classes and everything was public. And I just, you know, it felt like a lot of the implementation was being exposed.
Yeah.
So had James Simone was working with me on this, doing some code reviews. And he pointed out, you know, there's some opportunities to streamline some of this.
Nice.
And so, yeah, we started moving towards doing an interface instead. You know, I think it's much nicer doing it that way. And I tried to walk through that in the article I wrote on Joys of Apex. Because especially like when I first started years ago doing Apex, I didn't know what interfaces were or why would I ever use them. But, you know, you get into some situations like this where you start building it out and you start iterating a little bit more and more. And then finally, it just makes sense. Oh, an interface would solve a lot of problems here and make things a little more consistent across the board.
Yeah. I love that moment you get into where you just kind of feel like your code's sort of clashing with itself a little bit. And it kind of like,
yeah,
it's almost like you're trying to solve the same problems you were trying to solve with the original, you know, platform cache implementation. You've abstracted it out to a layer, but now you're just like, you have that overwhelming feeling of clunkiness that you want to solve.
That's right.
Any other features of the logger you want to call out on?
Of the logger or the cache manager?
Oh, sorry, the cache manager. We have a whole other episode on the logger. It's true.
I would think. I mean, I think for me, it's the big takeaways or why an Apex developer might want to use this is it just solves a lot of the headaches for you. Stuff that you could for sure write your own cache management class, but there's just some nuances of dealing with platform cache that I found a little either goofy or confusing to deal with initially. Yeah. So it really helps simplify. If you just want to be able to use caching, it really takes away some of the headaches with that. Yeah. And then to me, one of the best things you can do when doing these kinds of developments is making things configurable. So again, the custom metadata types, mm-hmm. I think are huge wins for both admins and developers. If there's any kind of issue that goes wrong in prod, you can disable caching easily. You can, mm-hmm. you know, change how long the session or how long the caching lasts. And there's actually a second custom metadata type as well where you can, through configuration, you can define data that would be automatically stored in the cache. So if you want something automatically populated into either org or session cache, you can create a custom metadata record and have some static version of it. It could be JSON or string or, you know, whatever data type you need to use.
Yeah.
And then that will automatically get loaded the next time the cache manager is used. So, you know, a couple edge cases and things that maybe people don't need to use all the time or very infrequently, but as soon as something goes wrong with, you know, code that's using the cache management and you need to temporarily disable it, or you need to override some value that's being used in the cache, being able to do all that through configuration and not having to redeploy your code is a huge time saver, I think.
Yeah. Well, and it just feels like, you know, back in the day when everybody was writing their own like REST API manager, like I think, you know, there was like 1,000 different variants of that out there at some point. So before y'all consider writing your own wrapper around the platform cache stuff, you know, let's just check this out. Where can people learn more about this?
Best place right now is on either joysofapex.com. The most recent article at the moment, at least, is one I wrote about it. Or you can go to GitHub and look at the repo that way. I can definitely provide the links, but the link for the GitHub is github.com/johngpi/nebula-cache-manager.
And that's our show. Now, before we go, since Jonathan is another repeat cast, instead of asking after his favorite non-technical hobby, I asked what hobby he'd really like to try.
Oh, woodworking for sure.
Yeah, nice.
My wife and I bought a house last summer. We got a lot of projects that need to get done. A lot of new furniture we need to have because we have more space now than we did in our apartment. So functionally and just for fun, woodworking sounds like a blast.
I want to thank Jonathan for the great conversation and information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week.